Yes, everybody. Here we go. The John Curley, Sherry Elicker show. And on the air, and you are there. And oh, wow, look at everybody writing. I know that's the teeny tiny lady going to choose that letter of the day. Could be the greatest honor bestowed upon you and your family. It's non-transferable, Sherry. You can't expect to go into a store and say, and how did you pay for that cash or charge? Oh, I was honored on the John Curley, Sherry Elicker show, letter of the day.
Yeah, so no currency there, but yeah. But you do have bragging rights, which counts for a lot in this life.
That's right. Pound your chest. Here we go, Diamond. Social status. All right. Let's see. We'll start with the King 5 story. This is, how do I say his name or mispronounce his name as I do everybody's mispronouncing everybody's name? Do you know how? Fayed?
I think yeah. It's Wasim okay. Fayed.
There we go. All right. So King 5 tells the story. This is June 1st. There's some Amish, not city council meeting, but this is a planning commission meeting. And here we go.
The things he was saying are disgusting, traumatic. And it's hate speech.
Noah Wagner with Seattle Pride and Eastside Pride PNW are condemning the comments made by Sammamish Planning Commissioner Wasim Fayed, who said this in a June 1st meeting.
I don't believe that LGBT should be part of the minority.
Once you start hearing where it's going, you cut it off at that point. Yeah.
And nobody cut it off.
Right, and that's concerning.
Fayed spoke to his fellow Sammamish City Council-appointed commissioners for more than 3 minutes.
These are people that are promoting diseases and infestation into the mind of our kids in schools.
We spread diseases, we're an infestation, things like that. These are humans, right? That's one of the fastest ways to dehumanize someone is to use language like that.
At one point, Fayed said the LGBTQ community is the most wealthy and connected, a statement Wagner says is objectively wrong.
We are overrepresented in unemployment, underemployment, housing insecurity, healthcare concerns.
Wagner says while these views are unsurprising, it's harmful coming from a person of power.
The reason we have pride is because we are a marginalized community. It is important for us to get together and you know, share in queer love and queer joy.
The city of Sammamish released a statement saying in part, while we acknowledge the commissioner's right of free speech, we are shocked to hear the comments made and we strongly condemn them.
Okay. So that's the story from King 5. And now here is it his entirety or did you take bit? Oh, wow, the whole thing.
It's almost right. The whole thing, yeah.
Here we go. So detailing his beliefs there during the commission. So this is after they did all the stuff on the agenda. He said, may I speak as like sort of public comment. They allowed him to speak.
So as my background as a Muslim person, it is my duty in my belief to speak or to promote goodness. And when I see certain things that are not appropriate and not right, to at least speak about it, right? Everybody has a right to speak about say something. When you see certain things are going in the right direction, say something good about it. If something's going in the wrong direction, it's good for people to speak about it and to provide their opinion. So one of the key thing that I go by in my life is a verse from the Quran that I would like to recite right now, which says, O mankind, O people, it is not O Muslims or O Christians or O Jews or O men or O women, O mankind, all mankind, verily we have created you from a male and a female, and we have made you into nations and tribe so that you get to know each other, not so that you despise each other and hate each other and fight, so you get to know each other. So part of the creation is that we are here to get to know each other, to learn from each other, so which is really a good thing. So one of the things that I learned from the presentation and was an eye-opener for me, because in my background, where I come from, we don't have these discrepancies between, you know, people of different colors, different race, different backgrounds. So, it clicked to me to see how people were disenfranchised with regard to their color, and then
Let me interrupt. I think they had gone to a bias training or some type of
diversity training.
Diversity training. So they all went on that thing. So that's where he's responding.
They were deprived from. They were created this way. They were created. They look this way. Like, for example, one time I was invited in Florida to give a speech or the Friday sermon at a prison with the chaplain of that was a federal maximum security prison. So I went in and I gave the Friday sermon, the Friday speech. And when I finished, there were also people who are not Muslim who attended the speech. They wanted to hear what we're talking about. And I got one of the best comments from one of the inmate. He came to me, and he was an older black person. He came to me. He says, "When I look at you, I see a black person. I don't see a white person." This is how close he felt, you know, when we need to embrace each other. And specifically, people, we're created certain ways. But then to club certain people who choose a certain lifestyle and say they are among the minority, I don't believe that is the right thing. And I'm going to be very specific. The LGBT community, and specifically creating a Pride Month for them, these are some of the most wealthy, the most connected people. I had a person who reported to me at Microsoft. He left Microsoft for a job to be an activist in that community that pays double what he was making at Microsoft. So these are not a minority people who are disenfranchised, and then we need to club them as part of the minority people. So in my opinion, these are people that are promoting diseases and infestation into the mind of our kids in schools. So we as a community, we should stand up for this. And that's my belief, and that's where I come from, that I don't believe this is the right way of life. God created us a male and a female. And to go and go against the creation of God and to spread diseases in the community is something that we should speak up against, or at least I would like to speak up against, because that goes against my belief. So that's what I would like to share. I believe in diversity. This is my life. I love the diverse community in Sammamish. But if someone wants to choose a lifestyle, that's to themselves. They decide on themselves. They do it privately. That's theirs. But to go and make it a thing to promote this in every movie, in every TV show, everywhere, teaching our kids and poisoning our kids with this, I don't believe this is the right thing to do. So I appreciate the time that I was given, and I wanted to share my opinion on this as part of the training. I don't believe that LGBT should be part of the minority.
There we go. All right. So that's the entirety of it. To me, the friction, the conflict occurs as a devout Muslim, as he is, if you read in the Quran, and if you understand how Muslims see homosexuality as a choice, not as a mutable characteristic. If you're black, you're born with that. That is your skin color. That is what you are. Often devout Muslims will often see homosexuality as a choice. And even if it's not, if it's genetic, they still see it as something that is sinful. So you will gain grace necessarily. That's more of a Catholic thing, but you will gain strength by fighting the urges to act upon your desire to be engaged in homosexual acts. So it's a choice. You don't make a choice to be black. You don't make a choice to be white. There he draws the difference there, and then thinks and then feels as if some of the activism that's occurring within the community is having effect upon children. So that's sort of the context of it. And I looked up to see, do gay people make more money than white people? The studies that are out there, there's about four or five of them. Even the studies at the very beginning, they'll say it's very hard to determine this because you have to talk about households. So you could get two females living together in a lesbian relationship. That's a household. one making more money than another. Sometimes somebody is in their 50s, somebody's in their 20s. The 20-year-old does not have as much power, doesn't have as much economic dynamism as somebody who's in their 40s. So the numbers are all over the place, so it's really hard to make just the determination that one group makes more money than another group. It depends on how you break it down. But I think that's his problem that he is now facing, which is, as a Muslim, he is to speak out if he sees something that he feels is wrong. So he's saying that this is wrong. These people aren't true minorities because they choose this lifestyle. So that's it.
Well, then he shouldn't be a commissioner if he believes that, because you can't take that. If that's what you believe, you're entitled to that belief. But to hold a public position like that with those opinions is not that it shouldn't happen. And as far as the money part goes, I mean, I understand what he's saying is that, you know, he doesn't consider the LGBTQ community underprivileged, but I don't think that's what they're advocating. I don't think they're looking for money. I think they're looking for support and inclusion. And so that's irrelevant, I think, the whole money thing.
I guess he's saying that they're disenfranchised, that they're not disenfranchised, right? So that's his saying that they're not powerless. I guess he's comparing it to, I don't know, the black community, right? So maybe he's trying to sort of split hairs on this thing. I got to tell you something. It's amazing to me. He says it without hesitation. He's just speaking as a man of faith, it would seem. And, you know, he finishes, and then that's the end of that for that guy. You know, it's not elected official a position. You're not chosen. It's not the public that chooses. It's normally the city council members that choose the people on the planning commission. But if you knew the planning commission was dealing with, you know, X's and O's and dollars and where are we going to put our money? What direction are we going to do? Are we going to build a town center? How many parking lots are we going to have? How parking are we going to have? And how much park space? And we're going to dedicate $20 million to this. And we're going to, you know, put a new beach in and, you know, planning commission sort of stuff. Does the fact that he feels as if homosexuality is a choice, does that disqualify him from sort of looking at the numbers and being in a planning commission?
I don't think he just thinks it's a choice. I think he thinks it's a sin. And so what
right.
you have then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if he thought it was a choice, I mean, there are a lot of people that think it's a choice. That's not the problem. The problem is that he thinks it's a sin. He thinks that it is a poison to young people's minds. He mentioned Hollywood. He mentioned so many different things that he believes are problematic in terms of influencing younger people. So if that's his core belief and that's his worldview, then you have to wonder, should a gay person come before the commission and want something? He goes in with such a prejudiced attitude that it will mm-hmm. work against that person. I mean, he can't divorce himself from that. So yeah, I don't think, I'm not saying that people need to agree with every aspect of everything that's put out there, but you can't mm-hmm. publicly say the things that he said and expect to hold a public office and expect it for people not to think it's going to color your judgment, because it does.
Well, you know, when Amy Coney Barrett was there before, I think it was Feinstein, might have been Dianne Feinstein. I think so. I can't remember which one it was. The senator said that, you know, she's concerned that your Catholicism, that your religion, the dogma speaks loudly to you, or you hold it closely. And the same thing was said about Kennedy as a Catholic, you know. And he said, I'm going to be president of the United States, not a Catholic. I will, you know, I will serve the Constitution, not the Pope, right? So you can have these two distinctions. And, you know, for instance, same thing. Well, Biden's a poor example, but, you know, he talks about being a Catholic all the time, but then has no trouble with abortion. Same thing, Nancy Pelosi. And that is a problem where you get into where all of a sudden, yeah, you're Catholic and do you believe this? Or are you only a Catholic on Sundays between 9:30 and 10:30? But then outside of that, are you not seeing, you know, the sacrament? You're not seeing the idea that you believe, you know, that you believe in the Catholic Church. You believe that life comes from God. It's at the time of conception. That's a human life. It's to be protected. So all of a sudden you have to park your religious beliefs over here and then advocate for abortion. You know, that's the the problems, you, the hard part of, the, of being both a, you know, a person of faith, but then also a legislator, right? So, anyway, long story short, he's he has resigned. I've asked him to resign. So.
Yeah, I think he must have expected that. I think he wanted, you know, I don't know, obviously, but it appears that he wanted to make one final statement about this. And certainly after seeing the diversity training, whatever it was, he had to know that this statement that he was making was not going to go over well, and that he probably expected to have to resign. And I think he did resign already.
Okay. Well, there you go. Glad we could do the whole thing there. Good job, Jacob. Good job putting that on there, finding that. Teeny, what do you have for Jacob? Anything. Just give him a gift, whatever you got. Something for Jacob doing his job. Anything. What do you think it's going to be?
Potato.
There's a shock.
Jacob?
Just look at it.
Thank you, I guess.
Oh, yeah. All right, you Gen Zers. That's people born 1997 on up. And a recent study says that they are, they're going to be better in marriage than the rest of us, Sherry. I heard, yes. I think it was Spike and Jack Stein were talking about this, and both of them disagreed with this. Gen Z will be better marriage than older generation, the study says from the New York Post.
That's right. It's a Tinder did a future of dating report. And I know
Tinder.
It's sort of ironic, but anyway, that they're talking about marriage. But Gen Z's focus on mental health and boundary setting, they say, lay the foundation for the most successful marriages yet, because Gen Zers are more into personal development, emotional well-being, clear communication. These are their priorities. And so therefore, they're going to be a more effective partner. But at the same time, they are less interested in marriage than, say, millennials. Millennials, so on the list of priorities or on the list of things that they would think are important, marriage comes at about 10th on their priority list. Millennials, it's at 4.
You know, these studies, I tried to sort of wrap my head around this and look at what makes for a good marriage. The main thing that comes up every single time is communication and compromise, that you are always sharing, you know, half to half, or we'll do this now, compromise for the you. I hear you. I understand you. I see. So you're moving forward as, you know, kind of one unit through the world. And it's about realizing, you know, you're a couple in this thing, as opposed to trying to self-satisfy and take care of your own needs. And then, you know, oh, what's the other person if they're happy? It's so complicated as to whether or not a Gen Z person would be better about marriage than someone else. So then I tried to look up how many Gen Z people were raised in intact families, a mother and a father. I think it's down to like 16%. The idea of their traditional American family, the mom and the dad, the 2.3 kids. That's not the case. A lot of them are only child. So only child, mom and dad get divorced when the kid is, I think they say 9 on average or something like that. So now the kid is kind of bumping back and forth between two different homes, but for that child, they don't know a different way, so that's sort of standard. But the main thing is, a lot of how you relate to your spouse is the stuff that you watched when you were a kid, how mom talked to dad and how dad talked to mom. Those are the things that you sort of subliminally or consciously begin to use to form your own way of having a relationship, right? And they always say that that in the first marriage, the woman will marry the opposite sex parent. She'll marry a guy who's a lot like dad. You did that with your first husband. I think his name was Eduardo or Paco. I forget his name. But he had, I'm going to guess right now, Sherry, he had a lot of similar characteristics to your father.
He was very, very smart. I will say that because he married me. Right. He was very smart. And my dad truly loved him. My dad thought he was a great guy and really respected him and his knowledge about certain things. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's somewhat true. what they're saying is also critical in this equation is the Gen Z's need for what they're calling self-care. Mm-hmm. And self-care, I guess, involves, you know, the idea that you have a work-life balance, that you are always concerned about your mental health if you feel as though there is something wrong. So that might make you a more sensitive partner because you're taking care of yourself. Therefore, you want your partner to take care of them, you know, who they are. And so that might be a factor as well.
I wonder if, you know, the stick-to-itiveness, right? The idea of hanging in there. Things get tough, but you still, you know, muddle through. You come through the other side. There'll be bumpy times where things don't go well, but then, you know, you stick together. You made this commitment in public before the eyes of friends and family, perhaps God, if you included that. And then you decide, well, you know, it's thick and thin, through richer, poor, sickness and health. And then maybe a Gen Z person might be more likely, this just isn't working for me. Remember the theory that, or the sort of weird sort of cultural thing that was happening where people were saying, well, this is my starter marriage. And then there was mm-hmm. this cultural sort of phenomenon of, well, I get married and that's going to take me from 27 to 35. And then I'm going to get married again. If I get married again, that was going to take me from this point to the next point. And then I'm going to do it again for a third, you know, if they have three marriages. So the idea of like, well, this is just that we know this one is not for the long run. This is just us together for this time.
Well, I'm not so sure that's necessarily the wrong attitude to have. I mean, I think it is really tragic and very, very hard on kids when people get divorced. But if they're truly unhappy, if they've stopped communicating, if they're doing more damage or have a toxic environment, why wouldn't they move on? It doesn't make sense for them to stay in a marriage that is not working for them. And there were a lot of people. Now, this is coming from somebody whose parents were married 67 years. So talk mm-hmm. about toughing it out. I mean, can't even imagine. But I think that, you know, sometimes people, they may throw in the towel a little bit too quickly, but I don't know anybody that has ever taken divorce lightly. I don't know anybody that hasn't thought when they got a divorce, at least giving it a few Hail Mary passes to try again and try again and try again. And so I don't think it's as easy as people portray it to be. I think it's a very tough decision. It's a very hard thing to go through. And a lot of lives get fractured in the process. So I think people do take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As a person who's been divorced twice, it's a strange feeling when you look down that piece of paper and in a state of Washington, you know,
right.
They've got blah, 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 blah. Then you've got your full name there and your full name of the wife there. And then you sign the thing and it's finished. You know, you had such hopes and dreams and such things of where you expected your life to be. And then, you know, you think about all the times, it's difficult as it is. You know, marriage is an interesting sort of cultural, economic, man-made, joining of two lives. And if you follow the history of it, where you're brought together, you get together and you need children in order to work in the fields and you partner together for procreation's sake to have children. And then normally you would die, be eaten by an animal, something heavy would fall on you, or you'd get a common cold or whatever and you'd die. I remember when I talked to the guy that wrote Naked Ape, he said, well, most people would have been dead by 25 or 26. So it doesn't make sense that somebody's married for 55 years or in your parents' age, you know, or even 30 years. That's not the way we as biological animals, Desmond Morris from The Naked Ape, we're biological. And all the rest of this stuff is all cultural on top of us. Monogamy is culturally, laid upon the foundation of our biology, and it fights against stuff. And then, you know, mating for life and having one person for life is all, again, it's a cultural institution as opposed to a biological, natural, you know, desires and evolution of the human animal. So, wow. Sorry, I'm so heavy there. It's just... Way to go, Gen Z. You guys are number one. Okay. Sherry, why don't you come into my office and talk to me for a little while now?
Well, I'm okay with this topic. I don't have any real problems.
Okay. Sit down over there. I'll get
okay.
you
right.
a cup
you.
Of tea, maybe some herbal tea or something.
I'd herbal. Like that. Thank you. Okay,
I've
we can talk during
Earl
the break.
And I've got an orange zinger.
No, I don't like flavored teas. They never have much flavor.
I'll get you the orange zinger then.
I'll do the Earl Grey.
All right. Here we go. Oh, thank you, Peter Gessler. Let's bring that mailman in. Now, if the mailman were to slip and fall on a banana peel, Sherry,
I'm
the mailman. Call a lawyer.
Yeah, he'd be responsible.
I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with Wouldn't me. Be funny, though. I'm the no, Nate, stop laughing. All right, we'll get to letter of the day, but first let's take care of all the rest. Oh, boy.
Okay, Second Amendment guest Garrett says this, it's not just AR-15s. I can't buy a 22 caliber target pistol with a threaded barrel.
Yes, and you're safer for it, Garrett. 253, a gun looking scary has nothing to do with how many people can you kill in 20 seconds with a shotgun? Probably not as many as a semi-automatic rifle. That's the logic. Okay, well, that's I don't even want to begin on that one, but move on.
Okay, 425 says, about a year ago, I went to buy a very specific handgun, a Smith & Wesson revolver. Maybe it was because I was wearing a rather expensive watch. But the salesman then tried to convince me that a $2,000 AR-15 was the better choice given its rapid rate of fire and larger capacity for rounds. He even went into great detail about what would happen during a home invasion if I was the poor idiot with the six-shooter. Home protection was the last thing on my mind, given the minuscule possibility of the act and even more minuscule chance of me successfully confronting a group of armed intruders. In fact, the chance that my AR-15 would be used in a mass shooting event would be statistically greater. What are the ethics of upselling what is essentially a weapon for soldiers?
Wow, amazing. I wish I had time to answer these for you. Millennial homeowners, Lance in Manchester, Jacob, the kid boy thing goes back a long way. When I first started driving commercial trucks, I was 27. A woman in the office that was 45 called me kiddo, but not in a mean way.
That's good. D-Day 206, Curly, you're killing me. God bless those who served.
Vanessa, several have been found away. We were there at the cemetery. We took 4-hour bus trip from France. It was worth it. They're still finding bodies.
253 says, such a moving account from one of the men of the greatest generation. I pictured it all in my mind. I can't stop crying. I'm so grateful and proud.
So many letters on that. 425, thank you, John, for sharing D-Day remembrance. Can't see through the tears. That's how it should be.
Apple headset 360, Curly, imagining how many assault rifles you could buy for those Apple VR glasses.
Yes, I think one in and some very expensive optics.
Yeah, scopes.
I augment my reality every night. My goggles only cost $11. My six pack plus beer goggles make me better looking. Are you 509?
Ken Griffey Jr., Budweiser ad, Trevor in the 206. Wall Street Journal said it was probably an excellent time to buy in Bev Budweiser stock currently today.
I saw that too, yeah. Pomeranian Wanda says, I don't even drink beer, but now I really want a Bud because of the Griffey commercial. Wow, now that's effective advertising.
Chris Christie, Mike in the 206, says, as a moderate Democrat who has voted Republican in the past, I like Chris Christie and would consider voting for him.
Well, there's one. Put that down. Traffic issues. Aaron in 360 says, well, I just heard about the egg spill on the highway. I'll bet they're scrambling to clean it up.
Other letters. 425. John,
yes.
Sir, can you
please
let the diving into the news thing go? You hold on to that like you're in the middle of the Atlantic with the last floaty.
I don't know what to say. John, the behavior exhibited by the TikToker in public spaces would give him a shot in many parts of the USA. I'm still reeling from giving up the diving into the news.
And now it.
You don't have to do it. It's just one person's request.
No, I'm not going to. I'm going to go into that therapist's office and talk about it.
Oh, there's some tea in there.
You can take my spot. I don't really need it. Okay.
Send Sherry back in again. I'm going to talk to her for a moment.
All right. Sherry. Here's the letter of the day. Oh, you want to talk to me, doctor? Area code 206 says, I hate beer. I am 12 and proudly sober. I did accidentally drink a margarita once. It tasted good, but beer is bad. My mom makes me listen to this show after school almost every day, so I decided to make it more interesting and text in. Also, my birthday is tomorrow. I'm excited to turn 13. And that's when you can have a beer.
Something landed on my mom's car. It stinked.
Boom. Done. You owe me a beer. There you go. Happy birthday
that's
to you,
you
margarita swilling kid. Kiddo.
That his mom makes listen to the show.
He takes right. Makes it.
Good.
Against
good
his will.
You. Come on in. I want to talk to you from a close the door. All right.